The first part of our talk was not recorded, so I'll just do a little summary after we have our first question. And if you have questions left over from before, please come up to the mic. Okay, Ida?
Let's see, it's not exactly a question, it's just an observation. I was raised as a Catholic, and in my early 20s, began to question things. I became a scientist. I spent my adult life being a scientist. And when you talk of science versus religion, which is some of what I heard, it seems to me that science did play a big part in kind of pushing away the stuff that wasn't religious. The fact that the sun was not the center of the universe, that the earth wasn't flat, that we're not 6,000 years old, as the Bible says. So it's really hard for me to, because I don't approach the world in faith, I approach it in practicality. It's like if I have a problem, I don't go to Mother Mary. I think, okay, what can I do about this? You know, perfect example is my hip. I haven't been praying to God about it, but I've been trying to think, okay, what do I do about it? What are the steps I can take? So when you speak of that, and I guess I'm not really getting it, what this faith is, because I don't seem to have it. Nor do I miss it.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. Good. That's a very good question for us to look at, because maybe other people have that same sense. And first of all, it would never be science versus religion. It would always be both. And St. Thomas says all truth is from the Holy Spirit. So it isn't as if there's a scientific truth and then there's a religious truth beside it. And maybe we could go to the more important part of Ida's question, which is, what does faith bring to our way of being in the world? So first, it seems to provide some type of overall framework or sense of a unifying principle that helps us understand the way things are. Secondly, and I place this in the center because this is the most important, it gives us the realization that there's some kind of presence in us and in the universe and in all our predicaments that wants to support us, that won't let us be without an oar, that wants to help move us along. It's kind of the equivalent in science of an evolutionary driver, something that wants us to adapt better and better to the world around us. That's what evolution does. And this presence, which could be called a higher power or God, Christ, Buddha, just some larger life that we participate in and have full access to. It isn't as if this larger life or presence is somewhere up in the sky, but we're in it. We're inside of this presence. So it's an indwelling spirit from one point of view, but we're dwelling in it at the same time. And there is no it because it's not dualistic. So you see how you need faith even to look at things this way. Now, by framework, I'll just say one more word about this. I mean that when things happen to you, you place them in the context of faith by saying things like, well, this suffering that has come to me must have something in it that is going to help me grow, help me be more conscious of the presence of Spirit in my life, and be more conscious of the final feature of faith, which is that everything does not depend upon the effort that we put in. There's another force at work, a gift dimension in life called grace. And that we have access to it all the time. It's always coming to us in the form of people, places, things, predicaments, feelings. And when we get it, that there's this gift element in what happens, we feel a sense of gratitude which enriches our life experience. From the presence, we feel a sense of accompaniment which makes life easier to endure. And from the framework, we feel a sense of coherence, that things fit in a synchronous way rather than just anything happens in any old way, as if everything were just chance and random. When you have this sense of some kind of unifying frame around what happens, you get the sense of coherence, continuity, which also gives you a sense of trust in the story of being human. Trust in the story that human does not mean alone. Trust in the fact that everything has a gift in it, and that our attitude of gratitude and response is something that makes us more conscious of the bigness of who we are. That it doesn't all depend just on me and what I do. That there's something else happening that helps me. This is what I see as the three gifts of faith. Make sense so far? Notice I did not put beliefs. It's not like a list of beliefs. That doesn't help us very much. Unless these beliefs somehow grant a framework, present a presence, and alert us to a grace. Otherwise, they're not really part of the faith experience. So this is what we gain when we come from the grace place. And it's difficult to do this because there's something in us that doesn't want to believe this. Like, there is no framework, it's just random chance. There is no other presence, it's just me. And there is no grace, it's just fate, circumstance. Faith brings these three, which activate something in us that transcends just our ego mind. Because all three of these upgrade your human experience. Everybody get the idea? I mean, especially the central one, which is the presence. Remember the 23rd Psalm. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. There's a presence, there's an accompaniment. And, of course, we could apply that to the voyage when you're in the stream and there is no oar and you don't know what the port is. that when you feel that way, to tap into or to access this sense of presence makes it much easier. Now, one of the reasons that we have let go of our religious beliefs is because they weren't presented this way. They were presented as a story that was supposed to be taken literally. And of course, after a while, you begin to feel like that sounds kind of uninformed and even childish, and I no longer want to go there. But if it had been presented originally in this way, and if you could have seen the story as a metaphor for the human journey and how this human journey has a coherence, has an accompaniment, and has a grace, that type of religion you probably wouldn't have let go of. But if all you got was, well, this is what happened and this proves that we're the true church and these are the miracles, I mean, if that's all you got, then you weren't really introduced to the full rainbow of what faith is about. And of course you would let go of it once you became a mature adult. It's a wonderful gift to have found these three as the qualities, the dimensions of faith, rather than an adherence to fundamentalism. Make sense? If you want to come up here, you can take Gloria and then... Yeah.
Okay. I worked at Holy Spirit Retreat Center in Encino, and these were Sisters of Social Service. And we had a resident priest, and he was a writer, and he would use us as guinea pigs on his writing. And one of the programs he had was Genesis 2. And I'm a convert of 45 years, and you know how converts are. We start over here, and hopefully we move over to here, but it's a process. So what he gave to me was so rich and so helpful to me, as were the sisters. He said Catholicism is a philosophy of life, and that just opened it up. We're all created equal, and it's the way you see the world. Gratitude, grace, and I don't know. I guess I've just been blessed because I just sometimes I get on the opposite end of it because I tend to give too much to the other way, too much trust. But it always seems to work out because I just believe it so strongly that it will work out if I just keep myself as an open vessel, which is not always easy.
Mm-hmm.
Not always easy. Anyway, I just think that... I have to say that when I was about 5, I did have an experience. I was not Catholic, but my best friend was, and I copied her. I started blessing myself, and I did have some pretty interesting experiences, so I think that led up to my conversion.
Good. Thank you, Larry. And I like that phrase, the way of seeing the world. That's what I mean by framework. You had a question?
What comes to my mind has to do with the universality of the world and different peoples and so forth. And I liked the thought about faith being a process, but what was in my mind is sort of, is it a gift or is it a need? And is it taught or is it a basic need or maybe both? So I'd love you to address that.
It seems like both fits. I mean, we notice that you can't make it happen. People teaching you something only opens up the door, but it's up to you to walk through it. Since these three help us have a more serene and coherent life, it seems like it would be helpful to have them as part of our experience. But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. So in that sense, it's a gift. Just like so many things in life. Like if you have a love of poetry or history, you didn't make that happen. It just came with the original equipment. And not everybody got the same gifts, obviously. But I'm so glad this question came up because this helps us see where faith fits in our topic, which is looking at these questions, which are faith questions, and such questions as, why are we here? Is there an afterlife? Is there a God? Why is there suffering? Why is there evil? Why are people inhumane to each other? What's the secret of happiness? They're not really questions. They're more like givens of inquiry. We wonder about them. So instead of being able to answer them, we want to open to them. That's what we'll be learning in our next four sessions. Because they're too big for any one mind to exhaust or even comprehend. It's more in the realm of mystery. And mystery is an interesting word. It's originally Greek. And it has to do with, of course, something being secret or hidden. But notice, it's hidden or secret unless you are initiated into the mystery. So in ancient Greece, they had initiation rites, such as the initiation rites in Eleusis, a little town about 16 miles from Athens. And you made a pilgrimage. You walked the 16 miles from Athens to the shrine of Demeter, the mother goddess. And you went through certain rituals. And they also included a use of drugs. And somehow you had an initiatory experience, which means it's going to have some kind of pain in it, but it awakens you to a reality that you never could have come to using only your intellect. And the particular realization that came from this initiation rite had to do with new life, resurrection. Death is not the end of the cycle, only part of it. And the goddess promised you, since she's a goddess of agriculture, that things would always renew themselves, and so would you. That's what came to you. And you entered into this mystery. You still didn't quite understand it, but you came out of the ritual with a sense of trust that the goddess will keep her promise, and nothing about me will permanently end, and nothing about anything here will permanently end. Everything will continue to be renewed. A beautiful realization, a lot like the Christian archetype of death and resurrection. So mystery meant or was an invitation into an initiation process. This is not hazing. This is not hurting you so you will pay the price in order to join the group. This is initiation in a much deeper sense. You come in with uncertainty because they kept the ritual secret, so you didn't know what you were getting into. They kept the ritual secret, and you entered into it, and you somehow left your ordinary life and went into a kind of retreat or wilderness. And that's part of an initiation. So to live with these kind of questions will involve a contemplation, a silence, a letting go of trying to figure things out, just going into the wilderness as Christ did for the 40 days before his public life. And we see this example of the hero in hero stories. There's always the part of the story in which the hero no longer has all his powers. But this is a necessary feature of his journey. So we'll give a simple example. Robin Hood, he has a lot of daring do. He's very skilled at getting things done. But when he's in jail, he can't do anything. He's just standing there in his cell. Maid Marian takes over, the feminine. She's going to figure out what to do next and how to get him released. And she does this successfully. So he had to go into this letting go of his powers and trust the female powers. You see it in The Wizard of Oz. It's the scene where Dorothy and the three friends are looking right at the Emerald City, but instead of going into it, they fall asleep in the poppy grove. They just lie down, they fall asleep, snow falls, poppies all around, poppies representing this sleep state. And she has to do that to get herself ready for the big revelation that will come to her. Revelation that you have the power within you. Take this quote from, I took a couple of quotes that might be helpful. This is from Hermann Hesse, Narcissus and Goldman. He let himself be led into the night, into the forest, into the blind, secret, wordless country of no thought. So he had to do that in order to find himself. And take this one from Walt Whitman. I fled. Didn't walk into it. I fled. I fled forth to the hiding, receiving night that talks not. Gives no explanations. I fled forth to the hiding, receiving night that talks not, down to the shores of the water, the path by the swamp in the dimness, to the solemn, shadowy cedars and the ghostly pines so still. Give that once more. I fled forth to the hiding, receiving night that talks not, down to the shores of the water, the path by the swamp in the dimness, to the solemn, shadowy cedars and the ghostly pines so still. Night, unconscious, no thinking. Shore of the water, you're on the edge. The swamp, the dimness, the shadowy cedars, the ghostly pines. That's where you go for the initiation. Initiation into what? Into this heart place that opens you to live with the questions and let them be questions and not have to force some type of reply. Now, I want to share this quote by Carl Jung. The utterances of the heart, unlike those of the discriminating intellect, so that's what we're leaving behind. Discriminating intellect would be the opposite of the ghostly pines. The utterances of the heart, unlike those of the discriminating intellect, always relate to the wholeness of things. In this sense, heart shows the meaning and the perspective. What the heart hears are the great things that span our whole lives, the experiences which we do not arrange, but which simply happen. something like what Keith brought up. It has nothing to do with our plans and our thoughts. It just kind of opens up. So a good example of this would be the mind wants to distinguish and divide, analyze. So there's a big difference between A and B. But listen to this quote from Gospel according to St. Luke. This is the prodigal son speaking. It's also in the song Amazing Grace. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Mind doesn't like that. You're either lost or you're found. He says, I'm lost and found. And I feel somehow that I am lost, but I'm also found at the same time. This way of putting it is the heart's way of putting it. It creates a bridge between the two experiences. He was still lost. The prodigal son was still lost when he arrived at his father's house. I'm still lost, but I'm also found. Something in us that can go there. Now we have to ask, well, why would we bother with questions that have no answer? Well, there are no answers, but there are responses. There are no solutions, but there are practices and choices. We can engage in such a way that we find a new way of living with the questions. Those practices you'll see in our book, The Sacred Heart of the World. Another feature of this is that the questions seem philosophical. For instance, is there an afterlife? Seems like a third person singular statement. Is there an afterlife? But that's not what we're really asking. What we're asking is, will I have an afterlife? We're not saying, does George Washington have an afterlife? Or does the guy next door going to have an afterlife? No, it goes to ourselves, and one of the ways to move it into the heart place is to take it from the I to the we. So instead of it being about me and my future, it's what will happen to all of our humanity. In that sense, it's like a mystical body speaking through us. And we're no longer just caught up in our own story and in our own needs. We start to have more of a consciousness of how we're part of an evolving humanity, and our concern is for this evolving humanity. So that's a way in which we approach these with heart. We'll be doing that as we go along. Finally, when we ask a question like, why do children starve? Why does God permit children to starve? I might ask that question. And the answer will not be because of this or because of that. The answer will be, why do children starve? I'm doing something to help. This is very important. That the answer to some of the questions will be, I'm making a commitment to change it. So instead of saying, why do children starve? It's, and I need an answer. It's, why do children starve has moved me. I drop the why. I say children starve. Now I'm working to prevent child hunger. So even though there's no satisfactory cognitive answer and there's no one to blame, I have lived my response into the question. In other words, I have become the presence in the world that I have been believing is what God is about. I have faith that there's an indwelling Holy Spirit that accompanies me through my life journey. I'll become that kind of a presence to the children who starve. This is how I've answered the question of why do children starve. It's kind of Mother Teresa's way of answering. You didn't pay attention to who's to blame, how did it happen. Just went straight to, okay, what do I do about this? So instead of saying, is there an afterlife, it's how would I live into a bigger life than the one designed by my ego? How can I live into that bigger life? What is the next step into that bigger life? Now what's happened is I'm in the question. I'm answering from within it. And so I come up with my final statement. I open to the bigger life. Now I have deepened the question without having to find a specific answer. So I'll just take that once more. Is there an afterlife? Goes to how would I live into this a bigger life? How can I do it? What is the next step to take? I open myself to living into a bigger life. This puts aside or relocates the original question. So it's no longer something that's taxing my mind. It's something that has opened me and deepened my sense of self. Listen to this beautiful quotation from Henri Lassau, a Benedictine missionary who went to India. But soon enough, he discarded all his Catholic style, entered into the Hindu perspective, changed his name to Abhishekananda, and concentrated entirely on Vedanta and Advaita, that is the non-duality. And look at this, is his beautiful statement, and you see how he pulls together his Catholic and Hindu traditions. As he passes from depth to depth in his own heart, the awakened disciple reaches the ultimate depth of the heart of Jesus, a pointer to the deepest recesses in his being. Then, passing beyond it all, freed from all inhibitions, even mental ones, he finally reaches the source where in his eternal awakening he discovers what he is. I only found myself in the heart of the universe. I only found myself in the heart of Jesus. That's what he's saying. And that what you'll find will be stripped of all the sugar coating and the thoughts and ideas and arguments. All of that will go. And you come to the source that's in eternal awakening. So, our time is about up, but I want to end with just one quotation from Teilhard de Chardin. He'll be our main teacher in our course to show how he also saw that when we come from this hard place, we're able to live with these questions in a way that leads us to practice, that leads us into a new way of committing ourselves to the evolution of humanity. So this is from his book, The Spirit of the Earth. our consciousness rising above the growing but still too limited circles of family, country, and race, shall finally discover that the only truly natural and real human unity is the spirit of the earth. In other words, our consciousness will become bigger than a description of us based on our family, our country, our race, our religion. And the only unity that we will appreciate will be our place in the evolution of this planet. See the bigness of this? You see how he's gone way beyond that narrow parochial, we're the true church. He's way beyond that. He's going right to the heart of the matter, the heart of matter, that is the Sacred Heart. Thank you.